Thank you, Judge. May it please the Court, Counsel. I'm Brian Threlkeld with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois, arguing on behalf of Sergio Ramirez. This is another fast-track case, and the first of two I'll be arguing today. And I don't want to retread a lot of the ground that the Court obviously just heard from both counsel in the previous case. The Court is clearly concerned with the question of qualification for eligibility of defendants for the fast track program. Were they in a fast track district? I think that it sounds like a lot of the argument on that is getting overblown at this point. If you look at the decision in Reyes, it only says a defendant must first have been eligible for fast track status, and the Court did not elaborate on that. It could mean no more than simply that the defendant is charged with an offense that is dealt with by fast track disposition programs in other districts. Now, this is an illegal reentry case, and there are fast track programs in other districts. What further would constitute eligibility is not clear. The government, in its brief, acknowledged that there is no single source that you can go to determine what various districts throughout the United States demand of fast-track defendants.
Would the offense, this aggravated kidnapping offense, be disabling?
It wouldn't disqualify a defendant. Again, there was a question: does a crime of violence in the defendant's criminal history disqualify the defendant from fast-track program? And I think that in part has arisen from a misunderstanding of the Attorney General's memorandum, which back in 2003, I believe it was, and all that memorandum said was that as a class, violent offenses can't be ones that are subject to fast-track disposition. Didn't say anything about violent offenses in criminal history. Now, a sentencing judge, that might be one of the things a sentencing judge would consider in determining whether a fast track, if they were in a fast track disposition, whether it was appropriate to deal with a given defendant through the fast track program, or the United States Attorney might make that determination in figuring whether they were going.
Well, that would depend on the specifics of whatever the program is in the various districts.
Apparently, there's no common source of information for what the requirements are in the various districts. The Attorney General's memorandum doesn't say anything about criminal history in terms of whether defendants may or may not be eligible for fast track disposition, whatever their underlying offense. There was also some question what perhaps is distinct in this case from the one the Court previously heard. There was a question of whether the district judge had actually considered Mr. Ramirez's fast-track argument. At the time Mr. Ramirez was sentenced, the law in this circuit was that a judge must not reduce a sentence on the basis of the fast-track disparity argument. There was no the judge.
He pretty clearly says that he would even with such consideration he would decline to grant a departure on that basis, doesn't he?
The judge said if even if this court were to consider the fast-track disparity issue, that's in the subjunctive and properly because the judge can't consider it. That is at best dicta.
Meaningful dicta, he says, even if it would be part of my evaluation, your guy wouldn't get it. So having said that, how do you get to your argument that that your guy would have been eligible? It seems to me the judge has already addressed that.
The judge, if you were to ask me to do something and I said, well, I'll consider that, but in fact you found later that you knew that there was something, some reason that I could not do what you had asked, then you'd be perfectly right to say, well, Mr. Threlkeld never considered. He said he was going to consider it, but he never considered what I was asking. Fact is, the judge never had this issue before him with an understanding that he could consider it. And this is, again, he also couched the rejection in terms of concerns about eligibility, which I think are very questionable. They certainly weren't explored thoroughly by the parties before the district judge. And this was the judge's statement of what he would have done strikes me as rather perfunctory. I don't know what would happen if this case is remanded for reconsideration in light of Reyes-Hernandez. The judge may not decide that it's appropriate, but I believe Mr. Ramirez deserves to have the issue heard by the judge, with the judge understanding that in fact it is a real option, and also to have these questions of eligibility explored in a meaningful way.
Right. Did you want to reserve the rest of your time?
Thank you, Judge.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Threlkeld. And Ms. Mallory.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Monica Mallory. I represent the United States. In this case, you're going to hear a lot from all counsel in all three cases before you this morning. I just want to start with one description of how I think we need to look at this case specifically. To be eligible for fast-track disposition, first you have to have a qualified offense. In this case, the immigration offense, the illegal reentry. Then you have to be able to establish, and the defendant has to do this, that they meet the minimum requirements established by the Attorney General. And only then do you really need to look to the district-specific requirements of whether or not you have a qualified defendant in that district, whichever one you choose to compare yourself to. In his case, he had a crime of violence. We would look to whether or not that crime of violence somehow made him ineligible in whatever district we want to compare him to. And then you may have other factors, criminal history, other prior reentries that are important to that specific district. And only then would you be able to decide what to do. Go ahead.
How would Mr. Ramirez have known what he had to show at the time of this sentencing?
Well, he would have to select a district that he wanted to compare himself to. Now, what he would not have been...
How would he know that if our circuit law prior to that was this is not something that can be considered?
Well, he made the argument. And his only what he said in his argument, unfortunately, was a bit short. His argument was that simply a disparity exists between him and a similarly situated person arrested in a fast-track district. That's the solely because argument, which I believe is still rejected. Although we've established in this circuit that the district court can consider the argument, we have not allowed the district court to consider the argument that solely because defendants here are not in a fast-track district that there's a disparity. That was the argument that he made. He didn't go any further to establish a similarly situated status, compare himself to other districts, eligibility, most importantly, the AG requirements, which are absolute requirements. He did not establish that eligibility, nor can he at this time. He did not do an expeditious entry of a plea. He had three statuses where he requested time to consider whether to file pretrial motions. And only then, after that period of time, he agreed to transfer the case and enter a plea. Within his plea, he did not waive any of the appellate rights or the habeas rights.
Ultimately, he did not make any pretrial motions, though, did he?
He did not.
Other than those enlargements.
Right. The only motions he brought were in the sentencing context. He did attack the 16-level enhancement for his crime of violence in his criminal history.
The period before he pled, what, 3 months or so?
About 3 months, Your Honor.
How does that compare with the fast-track districts?
I don't have any numbers to give you. I just don't believe it's not my position. That's expeditious. I think expeditious is really clearly within 1 month or somewhere around that time frame. It's almost like a pre-indictment plea. You enter your plea. You immediately move to sentencing. You establish that you're going to waive the things that you're going to need to waive. Those are requirements that the Attorney General has established for every fast-track program.
You know, it would be a lot easier if the Attorney General would just have a nationwide fast-track program with some firm guidelines that were consistent among districts.
Perhaps. To answer all of your questions, yes.
A lot of ink is being spilled on this, cleared up with the stroke of his pen.
Well, but I think you have to understand the history, and the history was because prior to those programs being instituted, we had districts where, because of either prosecutorial resources or those coupled with the number of cases, they were either not even bringing the cases.
It's a really odd history where you've got Utah as one of the districts, which is not a border state.
But it may have had some reason, looking at its resources, the numbers of cases, which were reviewed by the Attorney General and approved for fast-track disposition for these types of offenses. You know, the situation before that would be that there may have been districts where people were not even charged and were not brought to court, convicted, sentenced, or you know, spending any time in jail that were similarly situated to Mr. Ramirez himself. So, you know, that's not fair either. So these disposition programs brought those people into the system.
Is this crime of violence issued dependent in all cases on the program in effect in the district?
With the crime, whether a crime of violence makes you ineligible for fast-track disposition?
Eligibility based on...
For immigration offenses, it would be the district-specific requirements that need to be looked at. The mention in the Attorney General memorandum about crime of violence relates to establishing a fast-track disposition program for a crime of violence offense, and that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the criminal history.
Judge Tinder asked about a uniform system for implementing these things, and it seems to me that that's a pretty bright line. If you have a crime of violence on your record, you're ineligible. Why wouldn't that be a more rational position to take?
To have that as one of the AG minimum requirements?
You know, you don't get fast-track consideration if you have a prior crime of violence.
Well, for one thing, you know, that's addressed in the criminal history offense level calculation to begin with. And remember that most of these disposition programs take a 2 or 4 level reduction based off of whatever the guideline sentence is. So I don't know that I think it's necessarily a good idea to establish that bright line rule when we already are taking that into consideration by giving them a 16-level enhancement on their sentencing range. So the AG's requirements, the minimum requirements, do not include that. That's left to the different districts when they establish their individual criteria.
Now, in the preceding case, I guess it was argued that a 10-month reduction would have been appropriate in a fast-track district. In this case, he got a 50-month sentence. What would have, had he been eligible for a fast-track, and had the judge wanted to give him that benefit, what would the guideline range have been in the probable sentence? Because here he was sentenced above the guideline range, or within the guideline range. In the preceding case, it was a month below.
He was sentenced within the guideline range. I'm not sure that I can give you that sort of number. I have not. I mean, within each program, there are different levels of reduction that a defendant gets and different other criteria. This defendant had a prior illegal reentry where he was not prosecuted and was simply removed on his record. That was significant to this sentencing judge. Those kinds of criteria need to be considered in cases as well. I think that the judge has to apply the holistic 3553A analysis and look at all of those things. So I really can't establish in my mind some specific number for you. I'm sorry. My time is up.
What about a ballpark?
Actually, you've got until the red light goes on.
Okay. Ballpark?
Yeah.
For this defendant?
Mm-hmm.
I would not say that he is eligible for reduction. And it's primarily, in my mind, because of that prior reentry. He has a prior illegal reentry where he was not prosecuted by this district. He already had the benefit of, not being prosecuted, and then he came back after that. For those reasons, I don't think he should be eligible for any reduction. In this case, the district court understood the circuit law, but did say that if he had the opportunity to consider the argument, that he did not believe the defendant had established his eligibility. And, in fact, the defendant cannot establish his eligibility anymore because of what occurred leading up to his plea and his sentencing. Absent any other questions, thank you. The government asks that you affirm his sentence, except for that part related to the financial responsibility program, which we would ask that you simply modify.
All right, Ms. Mallory. And in response, Mr. Threlkeld, how much time does he have? 2 minutes.
Of course, the issue of meeting the minimum requirements established by the Attorney General is of limited relevance. It's often brought up, plea within a certain period of time, agree to certain things within the plea agreement, and so forth. The basis of the Reyes-Hernandez decision is that this isn't this is a circuit in which none of the districts are fast-track program districts. And so this court was made the Reyes-Hernandez decision with the understanding that the cases of these defendants by definition would not in all respects be comparable to the handling of the cases in a fast track district. In terms of the, for example, the question of did the defendant agree to an appeal waiver? As I noted in the brief, in the very first case in which this court directed me to address this issue, Huerta Garcia, it was an appeal case, and obviously, because it was proceeding, there was no appeal waiver. The court could have said, well, there wasn't an appeal waiver there, therefore this can't be considered. And this court did not make that decision. And I just wanted to note that the notion that a defendant should select a district that has a fast-track program and compare his situation to that district, again, flies against the underlying concept of Reyes, which is that it's a guideline concept that sentencing should be uniform nationally. And that's the problem with picking and choosing which of the various fast-track districts around the nation you would compare your defendant to. Again, that would be, in a way, undermining the concept of the guidelines, which was one of the motivating ideas underlying the Reyes-Hernandez decision.
So everything goes to the lowest common denominator, goes to the most lenient district standards, right? Is that what you're arguing?
I'm not sure. I mean, if the court wants to say that, we'll accept that. We're not going to argue with it. But I'm not certain how to handle it. And I think that the court was wanting the district courts to have to take a more general look at the effect of fast track programs nationally, rather than getting bogged down in this sort of minutia of you know, well, you know, can we say that our district is most similar to, you know, the District of Utah or the Southern District of California or, you know, wherever, whatever fast track district you might want to pick. But there's a problem with this idea, with this notion of saying, well, we're going to have to, you know, pick a district to compare ourselves to.
Thank you to both counsel, and we will take that under advisement.